Hello, welcome to Relatable. This is your host, Teresa Freeman. I speak with Emily Vickers, a friend and fellow female entrepreneur. Emily is the owner and founder of iConsult, a cyber, big data, biz transformation, and cloud architecture business. She's been in operation for 10 years and has a lot of great insight and counsel. What made Emily take the leap and leave the comfort of working for an established company? Was there a business plan? How did her clients help her along the way? And in this competitive market, what does she look for when hiring new employees? Learn this and so much more in this next episode of Relatable with Emily. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
I was thinking about this and I was like, okay, what prompted, like, you and I hang out a fair amount. So I remember when I thought, oh, I have to have her on, is you and I were having a conversation about, you know, being kind of in the corporate life for a long time, being leaders of teams for a long time. And we started joking about like some of the common frustrations, right? About like, what some of those things are when you're having to lead a team and when, you know, you need, and especially as the decades have gone by, like, what are the things? And I couldn't remember what we said. It was something about like, if it's not right, I can't even remember.
Testing my memory now, which is really bad.
I know, I can't, but it terrible. Was, we were having a good laugh about like the quality of a deliverable and like, you know, if it's kind of half-assed or if it's not, you know, don't even show up kind of a thing. But I do think, you're someone that started your own business and you're someone that, I think as we've talked about, like your path to that point, I think would be really interesting. And then I also want to talk to you about, as someone who recruits people. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of, people that I coach that are interviewing either through a career transition or they have lost a job. Mm-hmm. And the thing that keeps coming up is that it's hard for them to get feedback from potential employers.
Sure.
So I'd love to dig into, just because it's timely and I have you here, maybe we can talk a little bit about that too.
Sure.
So tell me just a little bit, Miss Emily, like what's a day in the life for you right now? How would you describe what your role is, what your company is, yeah, and a day in the life?
Yeah. So, you know, a day in the life can really vary.
Yeah.
I did start my own company about 10 years ago. And I've been sort of a lifelong IT careerist. Mm-hmm. I've done different roles from like being a developer to an architect to an engineer to a program manager to selling software and software companies. And, you know, eventually got to the point where I'm like, you know what, I just want to kind of try to do this on my own. And it's interesting because I started it a couple times, you know.
Did you?
I did. I created an entity, I think, in 2008. And, you know, thought about leaving the company that I was working with. And when I told my boss I was going to leave, he said, no, let's work something out. So he convinced me to stay and kind of made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And then I tried it again, probably 4 years later, and did it. And it was funny because when I started, I had just had my third child. And I had left the software company I was working for. So I was just going to take a break or mm-hmm. retire, or I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just knew I wanted to maybe just not do full-time work and baby and everything. Yeah. So during nap time and at nighttime, I wrote a business plan. And after taking a year off of no work at all, and you know, I just kind of realized it's not really, it's not in my DNA not to work. I've mm-hmm. worked my whole life. And so I'm like, well, let me just go ahead and try this, you know, and wrote a business plan. It took me about a year, started some business development, and it took me about another year and a half to actually make a dollar. So it was a long road. Yeah. That's how I sort of got started, was I've just always kind of had it in my mind. And, you know, looking at some of the sample questions you sent, you know, it really made me sort of take an introspective, you know, and think about these things that I don't really think about. But I remember, you know, back in high school thinking about just envisioning myself running a company one day. Wow. And I didn't envision, you know, what I am doing now, but I remember brainstorming with other classmates and thinking, you know, we ought to build this company to target baby boomers. There's going to be a huge population. They're going to need stuff. You know, I didn't know what. Mm-hmm. And we were like, let's start a home healthcare business. I don't know.
This
if
is
any...
when you're in high school?
Yeah. I don't know wow. why. I don't remember if it was an assignment or if, you know, if we were just talking, but I remembered that. And so I thought, well, I guess I've always sort of thought I would do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of started some things and it's kind of, you know, fits and stops and starts. And so here we are. So it's, you know, it's not.
So it's interesting from that perspective of like being, I guess, from an entrepreneurial spirit, if you think about the fact that it's so that earlier you made that connection that you were ready to do it. What was it about after being a career ITist, which I love how you explain that in terms of that those different roles and almost being able to understand the full life cycle of that employee, right? So you could plug into any situation and know what to do. And then if you think about having to drive one of those engagements, you know enough to say how to do it or what right. you want out of it. So that leap of, you know, leaving an organization and starting your own thing, what was it that you wanted to have that was different as an entrepreneur, you know, in terms of yeah. like when you say you would.
Sure. I mean, there's always an element of, you know, well, the company I'm working for is making a ton of money, right? And I don't seem to be making a commensurate amount of what I'm delivering.
Yeah.
So the I can't say that's not a part of it, right?
Yeah.
But it was also, you know, the software company that I was working for, my last job before the company I'm working for now, to be unnamed, okay? They were a huge company. They are a huge mm-hmm. company. And, you know, it just... they have to live within the constraints of Wall Street and quarterly earnings and revenue driven, sometimes at the expense of customer relationships or sometimes maybe what's right for the customer. And to me, that's what just doesn't sit right in my core. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did very well there and it's a great place to work. But I just, you know, I don't like to have contentious relationships. And it sounds a little corny, but I really do like to help my customers succeed, mm-hmm. you know, and hopefully it's a win-win for both of us, right? Yeah. But, you know, when you're in situations and I've been in situations where, you know, employers may, you know, even threaten compliance issues to get software license revenue mm-hmm. and to me, that's not the right way to do business.
Yeah, when it starts to cross that line or just even when it becomes more difficult than it should be, whether it's the relationships you have internally or, you know, so many things I think can be a cattle prod, right, for the move. And then you said one thing I want to ask you about in terms of what you described, like almost that 2-year period of, not to say you weren't doing some other things in terms of raising your child, but also the idea of like, that 2.5 years to get to where you made a dollar, mm-hmm. how did you stay patient and what was it that you were able, a lot of people would give up mm-hmm. In that length of time.
Yeah.
So how did you do that?
Yeah, no, you know, and I think that leaping point mm-hmm. is, it's an interesting point for anybody, I think, that wants to start their own business, right? And so, you know, if you think about, you know, where I was, right, I had quit my job. And I told you, I was maybe going to retire, mm. right, and be a mom. And so I was coming at it from a point of, I had zero income at the time, right? So, mm. you know, you think about it just sort of myopically, and you think, well, I'm making nothing now. So what am I losing? Nothing, right? But in reality, I mean, I could have gone back and gone to work for a company and made a salary. So I did forego, you know, going somewhere else mm-hmm. to earn a more steady income. But,
yeah.
but, you know, I, you know, my husband at the time, he obviously had a job and everything. And so we were fine, right? So that was part of it, was we were comfortable financially as a family. And so it allowed me to do that. But the fact that it did take a long time, you know, the first year, like I said, I did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The second year was the business plan. And again, I was just squeezing it in here and there. And then the next year and a half, I started, you know, doing my sales pitch, going out there, working my network, going out meeting with people. Yeah. And I didn't really have a deadline per se, mm-hmm. you know, and so I just kind of kept at it.
How did you figure out your pitch?
Well, I did create a business plan, and you know, you had to think of what do I want the company to be portrayed as in terms of its key differentiators, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, if I'm a lifelong IT careerist, lifelong consultant, you know, sometimes you do a lot of things and you're put into situations where you don't really know the answers, but you've got maybe the critical thinking skills or you've got the willingness to do the research and figure it out. And so, you know, the company, when you have nothing, it could do a lot of different things. And, you know, when I first started, I thought, you know, when I had the boss that gave me the offer I couldn't refuse, I thought, well, maybe I'll just write proposals for companies and, you know, do that. And then again, he made the offer. So I went back. And then the second time around, I thought, no, I'm going to go ahead and do a consulting thing, yep. you know, yep. and, you know, I've always kind of come from delivering IT software projects, again, from different angles. And so I thought that's going to be my pitch. And, you know, being in the DC area, federal government, right, is a huge customer. Mm-hmm. And so I went about it that way, right? And, you know, a lot of, I think what they lack or what they like is they like to work with people they trust, right? A lot of government employees, projects get started because of your network, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It could be who you know, or it could be you know someone they know, and they can kind of validate that you are upstanding, yeah. you're going to deliver, and you could trust this person. And so, you know, I kind of went and that's how I kind of focused on the target market. And, you know, again, I had some relationships coming from a big software company to, I had a lot of relationships in big consulting firms, right? And so those consulting firms often need to meet small business targets, okay? So that was one of my ways in, yeah. right? Was, okay, well, I'll become a small business. So, you know, we became an 8A certified small business. So a lot of times the big companies need to meet their requirements and the government needs to meet their requirements, right? So, you know, it helps because yeah. it's a very competitive market. And that's kind of how
I went about it. Like in terms of one of the questions I have, like how long did it take for you to go from an individual delivering and sort of selling the consulting practice in terms of you doing all the work versus bringing people on? Was that after that 2 year, like when you said you made your first dollar after 2 years, was that a contract that had a couple of seats in it? Or was it you delivering for a while and then you added on as you went?
Yeah, no, I was employee number one. Yeah. And I, you know, it took a lot to get to that point, right? So mm-hmm. you first have to convince the big consulting firms that you're not just one person shop, right? In reality, you are, yeah. but you have to prove to them, right, that you're going to bring more to the table. And so I remember they said, you know what, that's great, Emily, but come back when you have 8 people. And I said, okay, great. So we went and we did these recruiting shows and everything. And we, you know, made offers to 7 or 8 people and we came back to them. And I said, okay, it's me and 8 people. Okay. And of course I didn't hire these people. They're not sitting on the bench. I had no money to pay them. Right. right? But I staffed myself. Right. And so he asked me how long it took. I probably was a one person company for, I want to say 3 years.
Okay.
So yeah. 3 years in, you know, I made my way into, you know, a particular customer and delivered. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing is to deliver. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I was really focused on success and delivering my program. And the government guy who brought me in was like, oh, okay. Where did you come from? How come I didn't know about you before? Right. And so, you know, a lot of times when you're kind of fresh and coming from a commercial perspective, commercial can sometimes operate at a higher, faster tempo. And I'm kind of a hard worker. I work hard and I run hard. Right. Yeah. And that's not always the case in every industry. And I don't want to, I don't want to say just the government, but sure. anywhere. Right? Right. So I kind of came in as somebody that stood out, somebody that helped them do something that had almost never been done before. We moved, you know, big application to the cloud and they were kind of new to the cloud. Mm. Right. And nobody knew anything about the cloud at that time. And so it made him successful. Right. And he said, you know what? It's about time for me to rotate assignments. why don't you come with me and hire a couple people to help you, right? And so that's kind of how it started, nice. Right? Yep. It's sort of, you know, you have to almost, you know, fight for every little crumb you get, yeah. right? When you're yeah. starting out, and hopefully you get a couple crumbs, right? And then if you get somebody that believes in you and you've made successful, then they'll start to, you know, increase that aperture a little bit. So we went from one person to three people, yeah. you know, and then we made him successful there, right? And then he said, hey, it's time for me to rotate again. Come with me. And he said, all right, and let's bring a couple, leave those people there, let's bring a couple other, you know. And so I kind of, you know, left a trail, like a little breadcrumb trail. So you talk about crumbs, yeah. right? I left yeah. a little breadcrumb trail of successful programs. And that's kind of how
What's
it grew.
What's the name of your company?
Oh, I Consult.
I Consult?
Exactly, okay. I Consult. And again, I didn't, when I chose that yeah. name, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. So I made it a little generic, to be honest, yeah. you know? So I was like, so, you know, am I going to be a proposal writing company? Am I going to be a consulting company? I don't know, but that name works for whatever.
And then now that you're 10 years into this, how much have you stayed true to the, or like, if you think about your first couple of engagements and what you did in terms of those programs, have your scope of services expanded quite a bit since you started? Because yeah. one thing begets another, begets, oh, right. and then it, right? Or have you kind of stayed? Well, the reason I ask it this in this way is because I think a lot of people, and it certainly was true of me, when you're starting out, where there's all this counsel and advice that you need to be niche, and it's so niche. You have to know exactly what you're solving and be very specific because it is so competitive.
Right.
And so I'm curious, as time has gone on, has that expanded?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And what drives that?
I'm sure. Guessing, yeah. yeah. It has expanded. I would say, you know, I really got lucky. Yeah. I just kind of fell into something
yeah.
at the right place at the right time. There was a lot of hard work, right? And several years that led up to that point yeah. of kind of getting lucky. But we got lucky to get into the cloud space early, right? There were no experts in that at the time. Mm. So by default, I mean, we were learning it on the job, but we became the experts, right? And so that cloud work has continued and still continues today. But I mean, that's kind of the cool thing about technology. It's always evolving, right? Yes. And so now, you know, there's always some element of software in what I've ever worked
okay.
on, right?
Okay. That
and so, you know, cloud is basically, it's software managed hardware, you know, mm-hmm. not to get into all that, right? But it's software at its core, right? And so software can do so many different things, mm-hmm. right? And so as it evolves over time, you know, we've started to get into, you know, a lot of cybersecurity mm-hmm. Expertise because, you know, federal government, they have a lot of security requirements and, you know, they want to prevent data breaches and things like that. So they have very strict requirements around how to protect their systems, how to protect their data and their facilities and things like that.
Yeah.
So we've gotten into cyber, and now with, you know, the amount of data that agencies are collecting, you know, they're trying to, sometimes it's too much data yeah. and they can't really make use of it, right? Or they can't find what they need. So we've started to get into big data, right? And artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Yes. And how do I kind of find the golden nuggets of wisdom in my data that I need to take action on? But, you know, humans can't get through it fast enough, right? Yeah. So it's really, we've started to, you know, dip our toe a little bit into that. And yeah. We've hired some really great experts in that area. You know, one guy's getting his master's in artificial intelligence. We've got a PhD that, you know, they're way smarter than I am at this stuff. And they can, you know, reference all kinds of mathematical models and Bayesian. I don't even know what they yeah. are.
Yeah.
But that's why they do what they do and I do what I do. But it's really exciting, you know. It's an exciting space to be in.
So now that we're here and you think about, it's so great that you started with the story around you being in high school and even maybe manifesting this in some degree or thinking like you could have your own company. What would you say in terms of that being realized and probably more realistically after you started the second time and you've had all of that experience in business before, what is one of the things that you have been surprised that's been a challenge?
Yeah.
Something that you weren't maybe anticipating or that you thought that's not going to be an issue, but it's.
Realatable is sponsored by TFA Soft Skills, your one-stop shop for workshops, coaching, speaking, and soft skills development. If you'd like to hire Teresa, visit www.tfasoftskills.com for more information.
Right. Yeah, no, I think through the course of my career, you know, you have to take a look at where a person comes from too, right? And like, I am just by nature, you know, a hard worker, right? I've worked since I was 16. Okay. And I am very rarely am I not the hardest working person on the program. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am kind of hardcore when it comes to my programs, and, you know, I want to drive success, right? I'm a little bit of a perfectionist in the workplace and maybe a little bit of an overachiever.
Exactly. You say it sheepishly. I think that's a good thing.
You know, confessions. Yeah. So coming from where I come from, what was a surprise was, hey, not everybody's kind of wired that way. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always worked hard because I guess maybe that's what I, you know, expect that you should be doing and need to be doing, but not everybody's wired that way. Yeah. And so that to me was a surprising challenge in that, you know, it's sort of like even, you know, looking at children, right, in your family, right? My kids are all wired completely differently.
Yeah.
At work, people are wired completely differently. And so, you know, they might need different support, right? They might need some coaching, or they might need, you know, a little bit of guidance, or you just might need to figure out what motivates that person, because not everybody's motivated the same way. So that was a surprise for me. And, you know, generationally, you know, you notice differences as well, right? And so it's like, you know, each generation has its almost certain quirks and characteristics, and, you know, you can see commonalities in those, you know, generations. And so that's kind of, you know, an interesting angle too.
And what's interesting about all of what you talked about, it's not the what. So from a technical expertise standpoint, and knowing the content of the job and knowing how to do the job, which obviously connects to my world, right? Which is all the stuff that you're talking about in terms of the personalities and what motivates people, and frankly, interest. And like, I've referred to it lately as like currency to do well, currency to like show up and do a thing. Like, it's so different for everybody. And how much of that, a part of that, of their life, do they want that to be? And so I think it's so interesting that like, you can know a thing and you can be really good at a certain component of a discipline in terms of owning your own business and running your own business, and even trying to amass greater contracts.
Right.
This idea that like that you have to grow in that, in your capacity to be able to relate or manage to that. And then what would you say on the flip side has been a great like aha, or something that surprised you in a good way in terms of maybe what you thought it was going to be like, and you're like, wow, this is even better than I thought.
Right. Right. No, I like how you're kind of tying it to the whole soft skills, right? And I love what you're doing, by the way.
Thank you.
And I think it's so needed, and it's so true. You know, so again, me coming from where I came from, right? Hard worker, perfectionist, you know, hard charger, right? Yeah. And I always had, as a younger person, like, oh, well, if you work the hardest, you're the smartest, you'll get the opportunities. That's not true, no, right?
It's really not true.
That's not true.
Which is a harsh reality when you, I don't know, when people get that at different times in their life, and it like, really, and usually it creates like, you get that lesson at a time when you are really at an intersection where you feel like you should have earned something and you didn't, and then it's like it all falls apart, right?
But
like, I did all the things I was
supposed to do. But yeah, so it's, you know, that's when you start to realize, you know, and again, just kind of doing that introspective, you know, I look back and, you know, I got my first job from a college career fair, right? But then every other job after that was through my network, right? Yeah. You know, so that the importance of these soft skills, right? The importance of your network, right? Yeah. And building this network where you're taking care of your network, you're taking care of your people. And when you need it, guess what? Your people will take care of you, right?
Yeah.
And I've always said that, again, like, you know, I talked about, you know, a lot of business decisions are made on trust. They're made on relationships, right? Those are soft skills, right? It's not that I did a thing and I did it well. It's, hey, you know somebody and they said you're kind of okay, right? But yeah, I think those soft skills, you know, again, that was a realization for me. And, you know, as I started to realize that, you know, it's one of those things where I wish I would have known that sooner, yeah. Right? But as time kind of goes on, you realize, okay, let's take a look at that a little bit and invest in that, right? Because it's very easy to get kind of busy and get kind of consumed with your own day to day. But it's also very rewarding to take care of your network. And then again, when you need it, they'll take care of you.
Yeah, for sure. What do you love most about having your own company at this point?
You know, I love not having to report to anyone. <That's so great. laughs> Yeah. You know, working, yeah. You know, I've worked at a lot of big companies and, you know, there's always, what have you done for me this week? What have you done? What have you sold for me this week? Okay. I know you sold a big deal last week, but what are you doing tomorrow? You know, so that constant, you know, pressure of what are you doing for me? What are you doing for me is something that I do not miss. And, you know, what drives me at work is just, again, the fulfillment of helping the customer, you know, do whatever their mission is. Right. Yeah. And
like enablement of that, right?
Right.
Like you're a partner or
exactly.
Enabler.
Exactly.
So you've mentioned a couple of times, I'm really interested in this when it comes up and I'd love to kind of break it down a little bit in terms of being such a hard worker and that work ethic and that discipline. Where do you think that comes from? And how did that, you know, where did that come from and how did it become so important to you?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family, mm-hmm. right? So my dad worked, he was in the Navy for a while and he was a government employee. That's where he retired. My mom was a hairdresser. Both were very hard workers, right? And we had a great growing up. We didn't have tons of money, right? But I just always had jobs. My friends always had jobs. It's just kind of what we did. And I wouldn't say, you know, my parents pressured me in any way, really. You know, they were, if I compare myself to my parents, they were a lot more hands off. And I think that might be kind of a generational thing too, mm-hmm. right? Of, you know, our generation of parents was, or, you know, we're the helicopters, right? And we're probably a little too much into it. And maybe we do that because our parents were a little hands off and maybe we wish that they would have been a little more hands on, but we've gone to the other extreme, right? And there's probably a happy medium somewhere in between. But I kind of think I was just wired that way. You know, I talk about, you know, kids are wired differently. I think I'm just wired that way.
Did you play sports or anything like that when you were, or was it fairly structured around the academic, like were you pretty into the academic learning? And
you know, I didn't play a lot of sports mm-hmm. growing up and we moved around a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And I never was a super high academic person, but I always in school wanted to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went through a lot of different school systems in different areas. I was born in Texas, lived in California, moved out to Maryland, and, you know, every school system's different. Some are better than others, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I do remember making the move to the East Coast and having a lot of difficulty. It was material I hadn't learned yet, right? And so I had a little bit of a gap, and I think I was just self-driven to figure it out. I never felt too much pressure from my parents, mm-hmm. you know, even my peers weren't hardcore academics. And in fact, a lot of my friends from high school and college called me the cool nerd. So I didn't, you know, my friends weren't high academic, not to say they're not smart people, but they, you know, they weren't in the nerdy classes with me. And I guess it's just self-driven. Yeah. I don't know.
Kind of internal.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to call back to something because I think we both experienced it and hope, you know, if someone's listening to this, that is a little bit more early in their career and, or at this transition point, or maybe even entry level. My hope, right, is that people that, you know, we have kids that are approaching now that time of graduation of college where you're kind of entry level talent and you're like, how does this work and how do I operate in this new world? And I think, you know, once I worked in a larger business, in a consulting business, where the expectation was really high and the people that were recruited there were high caliber people. And you described the same in terms of the pace and the expectation. And I think that for me, and it sounds like for you too, that as a basis and a foundation in terms of how things operate and how to operate at a high level and how to operate in very stressful, high expectation environment. I mean, I'm at the time it was a lot, and there was a lot to manage with kids and trying to drive this career for me anyway. Like the idea of like we're similarly situated where it's like I work hard. Succeeding is very important to me. The idea that I'm delivering quality work is very important to me. Like very wrapped up in that. Like if I do well and if I'm delivering, that must mean I'm capable. I have this very, and so the idea that like in that environment, I was able to do certain things. It just, I mean, now even in owning your own business and being under a lot of pressure, it really doesn't compete to that, like in terms of that feeling.
Right.
And I feel like everyone should experience that or have a way that they try to put themselves in that scenario. Maybe not everybody gets to work for a big four or like a really well-known organization, but even when you're looking at cultures, find cultures that have high performance and high expectations because that's where you get the foundation. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree. And, you know, my business partner and I, we started at the same company. It was a big four, big five, whatever it was at the time.
And it was a big eight.
Yeah, right. And it was our first job out of college, and it was hard. It's very competitive, right? And we're always put into positions where you don't exactly know what you're doing, right? But you have to, again, have that critical thinking, have the willingness to investigate and figure it out on your own, even when you're in the most nebulous of situations, right? And, you know, if I think back to when I started with that company, that the training and that foundation they helped to set was, I hope that companies are still doing this today. I don't know if they do, but I remember, you know, they sent us off to, we called it boot camp. And, you know, my focus at that time was technology, right? Yeah. And so I went to sort of a 3-week development boot camp, right? And then when we came back, then we had kind of the HR training and finesse before they put you out onto your client sites, right? And that's where we had HR specialists come in. I'll never forget, her name was Cookie. And
good old Cookie. Like,
and Cookie sat us down. We're all these big eyes, you know, college grads, you know, going out in the world and trying to figure out what we're going to do. And she explained all the things, you know. It's like, okay, well, women, you know, don't wear pantsuits. You know, this was that time.
Right, yeah.
You wear suits with skirts, and the skirt is not to exceed any area above your knee, has to be below the knee. You must wear pantyhose. You must wear closed-toed shoes. And so they told us how to dress, right? They told us how to record your voicemail, you know? Hi, this is Emily Vickers. Thank you for calling iConsult. And I still do this stuff today, and I don't even realize that it came from that foundation. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you get an email from a customer or you get a phone call, you return it within 24 hours. Even if you don't have the answer,
that's a big
you
one.
Just acknowledge that you've received it and either answer it at that time, or if not, just say, you know what? Let me look into this and I'll get back to you. That acknowledgement, right?
Yeah.
So all those things just set a foundation of good professional habits. And again, you know, you definitely realize not everybody gets that training, right? But it's so, I think, helpful in the workplace. And it's a good sort of compass for success. It really is. For simple little things.
Yeah. You know? And I think that idea of like when you're starting out, if you have the luxury and you have some choices, and there's like that idea of maybe an established organization where you know that infrastructure is in place. I mean, I just feel like even 2 years, you know, you just take it and run with it. So you get that foundation. In terms of your partner, you mentioned that. So at what point did you add a partner in? Was it at the very beginning?
No.
Or was that later?
It was later. It was later. So, you know, like I said, you kind of grow crumb by crumb, right? And hopefully crumbs start to snowball a little bit. And, you know, we got to the point where, you know, we got from 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 5 to 9, right? And at 9 employees, I was still doing it all, right? I was billable full time, you know, on a client site. I was doing the accounting, the invoicing, the recruiting, the staffing, all the things. I was the janitor, you know, it's like in a small business, you do everything. Yeah. And it was a lot, right? Yeah. And so then I kind of roped in my husband, right? We kind of joke around that he was the unpaid intern for quite a while. You know, he likes to say he was the eye candy of the office.
He is. If he's listening, you are.
Right.
Totally.
That's right. That's right. And then, you know, he was happy to eventually one day get a salary with a company, right? And then started to grow and grow. And like, well, that became too much for the two of us, right? So then we actually hired, you know, a corporate controller and a security officer. And that's one person, by the way. You know, in a small business, it's sort of like everybody wears multiple hats, right? But when we got to the point where we had the foundation for the company to grow, mm-hmm. right? We had the infrastructure. We had, you know, HR processes. We had a payroll system. You know, we had benefits. We had all the things. And we just needed a grow. We had the platform. But I needed more help with business development mm-hmm. and recruiting and staffing and getting out there, right? We had the back office set.
Yeah.
And so that's the point where I reached out to Pete. And, you know, we had kept in touch a little bit over the years and, you know, I had lunch here and there. Hey, what are you up to? We actually even competed in an opportunity at one point. And he won.
Pete.
Right. But yeah, so it was just, you know, it kind of got to the point where, okay, we've got the foundation. Now we need to grow and I can't do it all. And I'm, to this day, I'm still billable 100%.
We should talk about that offline.
Right, exactly. I know. I need coaching.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So I think there's a couple things, too, as someone who does it all and you're such a hard driver. How hard was it for you to let go in terms of bringing other people in and on to say, yeah, I'm going to, you know, because it's such a personal thing at first. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, it's your, you know, yes, it's iConsult, but we all know it's like Emily, it's sort of Emily on the line, right?
For
the thing. And so is it just a nature of the saturation point? And so you don't even really think about letting go because you're, you know, it's that idea of like a duck, right? Where they on top, oh, it's fine. And underneath they're frantically swimming, right?
Exactly.
So is it more that, or is it a conscious, like, okay, I need to start letting go so that it can grow? And, you know, was there
a
combo?
I think it was a combo, you know, and I've talked to other business owners and they've had similar stories, you know, and I said, you know, I'm working full time on the customer side. I'm doing the invoicing. I'm doing that. And, you know, and I'm like, it's just so much, you know, and I was talking to another CEO and he said, his company's much bigger. And he said, yeah, Emily, I've been there. And he goes, I knew it was a problem when I stopped invoicing. So he said, I got to the point where I stopped invoicing because he was doing too much, right? And when you don't invoice, you don't bring in your revenue. And that's, you know, that's a problem. That's a fundamental problem. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a little bit of franticness of, I just can't do it all, you know, and I've got, you know, young kids at the time and still have, you know, some young kids. And, you know, I'm not willing to give up that time, right? With the kids, with the family. There's only so much I can do, right? And I'm not giving that up. That's set, right?
Yeah.
So I had, there were parts of me that had no problem letting go because I was just, you know, I was happy. I needed the help. I was drowning, right? Yeah. And then I might have micromanaged a little bit, you know, at first. But I'd like to think I gave the guys enough rope to run with.
Yeah.
Not that I, you know, just completely let go.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this question, just because as you're, as a smaller shop too, or as you're growing and you, and I loved how you described, because it helped me even just understand, like, if you go somewhere and you have a successful program and then that ends up being an annuity business, especially within government contracting, typically, if you do a good job and there's work there, then you might sign, you know, you might get that again the next year and the next year. So you said you have these, like, these crumbs along the way with these distinct projects. How do you create, or has that been something that's evolved for you in terms of the iConsult family, right? Of feeling like in terms of development and culture and all the things that you kind of work on within your own organization, versus just being an augment to a client, right? Them feeling like, oh, I'm really part of DOJ, or I'm really part of, right? Is that something that you've intentionally thought of? Are you at a point where that's just becoming a thing, you know, where that becomes something that you're trying to add to the whole overall experience about, you know, working with you, your type of...
Teresa's new book, Soft Skills I Learned the Hard Way, is out and available on Amazon. She writes about many epic fails throughout her career and how she learned from them so you don't have to. This book is full of cheat codes for how you can differentiate yourself when it matters, like in interviews, trying to get a promotion, or being a first-time leader. As always, thank you, Relatable Community. We are so grateful for your support and continued listenership. As of today, we are 10,000 listeners strong. Now back to the show.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think we evolved from sort of staff augmentation to, really, a partner in driving success for our partners and also our customers. Yeah. Right. So, I think that those early years are, you just have to get your name out there and you need to, nobody's going to do a lot of business with you if you haven't been out there for a while and they know you're going to be around for a while if you haven't proven your success, right? So those are the early years, I think. And then, as we got a little bigger and we had a little more bandwidth to do business development, we had that track record, right, to lead programs of our own, right? So, I mean, that was sort of, I think always the thought was, okay, we just, get one slot here. We get two slots here. We get three slots. Okay, we got one contract here, five people. Yeah. We got another contract here, five people. And, the idea is it's still, we want to continue to grow and grow and grow, right? And in the world of federal contracting, it's you have to have similar past performance on contracts before you can, you don't just go from $5 million to $20 million, right? It is a little bit of, you have to have proven past performance, right? It's always part of their evaluation.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think too, I don't know how you feel about this, but sometimes I guess it's the horizon question, because sometimes the horizon is what's 3 weeks away. Sometimes the horizon is what's 3 months away and then, 2 years away. But I think, I don't know if you feel this way, but you're kind of always bouncing between all of it and you're still delivering. So then there's like, what am I delivering on today, tomorrow? And, then you've got your CEO hat, right? Of like a business owner hat of like trying to kind of juggle all those different things. Yeah. Is that right? When you think about like, when you talk about kind of the incremental growth, but then you're also have probably some milestones and some like markers for what you want that to be.
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, when we did the business plan, we kind of, set those milestone markers, right? Where do you see yourself in 3 years and five years and 10 years? And you start to map out what that path looks like. Day one, you're not going to get a 50-person contract, right? So, you set, we set financial forecasts every year, and sometimes the next year comes and we laugh. Like, we didn't get anywhere close to that. But hey, we got part of the way there, right? Yeah. Sort of like if you look at 3 years, 5 years, from now, and also me just delivering on the customer side, I think I can compartmentalize very well. When I'm on customer site, I kind of drop my iConsult badge at the door. I become, XYZ government agency. And a lot of people are actually, they sometimes don't know if I'm a government employee or if I'm a contractor, right? So I kind of, I go all in on the success of that program. And I'm not Emily the CEO at that point. I'm Emily the whatever I'm doing on that project, whatever role I'm fulfilling. And then when I'm, CEO for iConsult and I'm doing things like, okay, well, where do we want to go next? Do we want to get into software development, or do we want to invest in another software company, or do we, do we want to, create our own thing, And so, that's kind of a fun and creative space, right? Where you can just think of all these crazy ideas.
Yeah.
And so, there's always an element of, for me, project delivery, there's an element of growing the business, getting new contracts, but then there's also the element of, entering new spaces, right?
Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you about recruiting for a minute, because I talked about it at the intro. In terms of people and candidates, and just there's been a lot of layoffs, right? The economy has been hurting, and a lot of people are in the position right now of trying to find work, and like, as you mentioned, like even here with the government being such a huge employer, but small to mid-sized company tech industry was hit pretty significantly. And so one of the questions I get as a coach and as someone who helps people with career transition often is, I feel prepared, I'm ready, I go into the interview, it feels good, And then it's a no, and I have no idea why.
Right.
And it would really be helpful to me if I knew it was a skill set issue, if I knew it was like, how did I really do in the interview? Was it just something that like I bombed in terms of interacting with the person I was interviewing with?
Right.
So I don't know, you know, that's a hard, I'm not trying to ask you to like answer for a manner of all different types of people, but in your scenario of interviewing talent and picking talent and assessing, what are some of the things that you find in terms of that get people a no? You know, are there ways that you could maybe characterize some of those themes? Or,
sure, yeah.
I think and that'd be helpful.
You know, in my mind, I'm kind of thinking more about what gets them a yes, you okay. know? And I'll start there maybe.
Sure.
But, you know, even from the point of looking at a resume, right? I got a great resume this week.
Okay.
And so very rarely do you get one that you're like, wow, this was really, really good. You know, it was 2 pages. And the person had been in the workforce since 2002. So, you know, quite a while. So she had to summarize 18 years into 2 pages. And just the word choice, right, is important. And so instead of sort of looking at, okay, I'm Emily Vickers, and here's what I worked here from here to here, and these were my responsibilities. And then I worked here from here, and these were my responsibilities, right? And you get resume after resume like that, mm-hmm. and it starts to, you know, you sort of like, you know, okay, you know, so yeah. So when you get those eye-catching resumes that really jump out at you and say things like, you know, I'm an innovative problem solver who's driven by customers reaching their highest heights, or, you know, that's not the wording she had, but it had great descriptors in it. It was sort of like, you know, kind of like a trailer for a movie, right? It was sort of like, what's Emily Vickers' trailer for a movie, right? In resume format, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So if you think about that, think about how you make those words leap off of the page, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then if you translate that into the interview, how do you portray yourself in that way too, right? You don't want to kind of sound like everybody else. You don't want to just regurgitate, I was a developer for 5 years, or, you know, maybe talk about the impact of the system you developed and what that did for your customer. Did it increase revenue? Mm-hmm. Did it drive efficiency? Did you, you know, whatever it was, right? So to talk about impact versus, you know, very, very sort of minute details of tasks and responsibilities. And, you know, we both have college age kids, right? And the advice that my oldest son got was, again, it was sort of like, what's that, your college essays, you want it to kind of be engaging, like a movie, right? Like a headline and a script, not I volunteered here and I, you know, I played this sport. And so it's just sort of how do you make it all sound interesting, because yeah. you know, you're going through a lot of resumes and you're talking to a lot of people. How do you kind of tout your success by way of what your impact was? Yeah. I think impact is a big deal versus task one, task two, task three, and what results did you drive, right? Yeah. So those are the things that make me say yes, right? Is have they delivered success? Are they driven? Are they motivated? What impact did they have? What success did they drive for their company or their employer? So those are the things that I'm drawn to. Mm-hmm. And then the, you know, kind of the,
conversely,
here's where I volunteered. You know, it's just sort of those, I think those are the kinds of things that might get you a no, you know, or, you know, yeah. like coughing up a Jolly Rancher onto your I love those stories. Oh, how you, think, you
yeah,
it's think. Your book is such an easy read, oh. and I, you know, I knew some of the stories, yes, right? And yeah. I felt like I was kind of part of the story myself.
Thank you.
But I loved how, you know, you embraced, you know, those fails, yes. right? And I think that's a big part of it too, is realizing that you're going to fail, right? And what do you do after that?
What do you do after? And I just love it when I ask a question and it just fuels what I already know to be true based on my own experiences. And I spent a lot of time in this world now keeping myself current with what's happening, because I wasn't, you know, I did talent acquisition a while ago. And so I'm, you know, but now I'm in that space a lot as a coach. So I try to do a lot of learning, but value and impact. And I believe that from whether you're 18, and I even work with eighth graders, I think everybody has value right. on this planet. So How do you articulate your value? You, even at 14, you have value, at 20, you have value, at our age, you know, your scope for that value is a little different. If you think of yourself, though, in the ways that you impact the world,
right,
then that, to me, I agree with you, that comes through. And the other thing, which you didn't say, but I'm wondering for you, just because I've heard it from other employers, is like the idea of enthusiasm and passion. And like, because it is saturated and it is competitive, I think people, because of the Zoom thing and whatever, everybody's sort of reserved now. You mm-hmm. just get this kind of vanilla approach. Like even someone with 18 years of experience and they've done really cool things, but then you sit down with right. someone and it's just, I don't want to say robotic because that's too dramatic, but I'm curious for you too. Like I'm assuming a little personality,
right.
a little positivity.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the introduction of, you know, all these sort of social technologies yeah. and Zoom calls, right, and Skype meetings or what have you, it removes a human element. It really mm-hmm. does. There's a big chasm you have to cross, right? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we've kind of even picked up bad habits in those areas where you might get onto a Zoom call, you know, if it's multiple people, some people don't turn their camera on mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. so you don't even make a connection, really. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Is the person, you know, do they have passion for what they're doing? Are they excited and energetic to come to work? And, you know, are other people going to, you know, fuel themselves off of that? Or, you know, did they turn their camera off and they didn't participate at all, right? So yeah. I think, you know, value, impact, energy, enthusiasm is huge, yeah. right?
And then where do you get your talent? And then we'll move on. But are there places that you typically go to find your talent?
Yeah, you
is
know.
Is it like the usual LinkedIn, Indeed? Like, is there any creative places that people could go that maybe you seek?
You know, we do all the kind of the typical things, mm-hmm. the LinkedIn, the Indeed. I think that the best employees we hire have been from existing employees.
Okay.
So they kind of come pre-vetted, right? From the people that
and
work
then reps on
for
the
us.
Line.
They're reps on the line.
Skin in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, to me, those have been the most successful people in the company, the high producers. We also leverage like a recruiting company.
Agency. Yeah.
Yeah. And that they have been delivering a lot of great people our way too. So I would say, you know, sort of employee referrals and our recruiting partner.
Okay. Well, now since you've mentioned twice, which I love you for it, I don't have to necessarily do my preamble on the soft skills thing. So what's your one or two, your favorite, you know, ones that you think are just so critical to success of someone in like the consulting industry or the IT industry, pick your,
sure.
you know, given your background.
You say consulting industry or IT industry, but it, you know, I thought about this, it's sort of, it's not just in your professional career, it's, you know, in your personal relationships, you know?
Sure.
But to me, the two that I thought about, one is listening, right? I think that that's becoming a little bit of a lost art. Yeah. And it can be a powerful tool as well, right? In business mm-hmm. and other areas. But, you know, it's sort of like if you're, you know, in a professional setting, if you're delivering a pitch to a customer, but you haven't listened to your customer tell you what their problems are, then your pitch is meaningless, right? And I don't know if you've ever sat in a pitch where you have a salesperson just wah, wah, wah.
I've been on the receiving end of that.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And so like they haven't, you know, you kind of get the impression they haven't made the attempt to understand what I care about, what my problems are, and whatever they're saying. I'm already kind of pissed off. Two, you know, what they're saying is meaningless to me, right? Yeah. So it's a fail for everybody, right? So I think listening to customer needs and being, like you said, an active listener, let the person stop talking before you start, right?
It seems obvious. But
seems obvious, but, you know, it's sort of like, I think some people are uncomfortable in silence, right? And I had, when I was in sales for a mm-hmm. software company, I had a boss who said, here's what you're going to do, you know? And he said, you're going to go into that room. You're going to ask him, you know, whatever the questions were, you're going to ask him what his pain points are, you know, what his budget is and what's their timeline. And then you're going to sit there in golden silence. He called it the golden silence, right? And everybody's uncomfortable when you do that. But then you start to realize the person you've asked the question to is almost more uncomfortable than you are, and they'll just start talking, right? So it's a powerful tool to understand what your customer's needs are. It's also a powerful tool sort of in negotiation and and gaining information, right? So that listening actively and, you know, sometimes silence is a powerful tool as well in communication. But the second soft skill that I really kind of thought about, and it drives home for me, is just being respectful and kind. I feel like our world has lost a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is, but it seems to be, I don't know if I'm getting older or if the world really is getting like that, but there seems to be just a lack of common respect for a human, right? I remember watching the Today Show one day, and there was a female CEO on, Andrea Young. I don't know what she's doing now, but she at the time was the CEO of Avon, right? A multinational billion-dollar company. She was a female CEO. She was of Asian descent, right? Which I relate to. And they were interviewing her on, you know, the Today Show, and they asked her this kind of same question: what really kind of drives you and your business dealings and your practices? And she said, as a Chinese American, one of the things my mother taught me was it's nice to be important, because she's in a place of power, right? It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice, right? And so that just always, like, this was years ago, but I always remembered that, and I always appreciated that. And I'd like to think that I model that in some way, but you know, I feel like today, sometimes if there's, you know, a difference of opinion, right, or we disagree, or, you know, you want to go one way, I want to go another way, the conversation doesn't have to be so polarizing, right, and combative. Mm-hmm. It can be, hey, I appreciate what you're coming to the table with, and I understand you have a different perspective, and you know, let's pull that thread a little bit more, right, and have a dialogue, have the respect to have that dialogue, and you know,
it's when you see people that do that well, that like when you can watch that in action, where you, someone that's in a position of power and they have a certain approach that they want and they allow for the dialogue, and sometimes they might be swayed, but sometimes it's like, well, I appreciate you sharing that, but we're still doing X. And it, I don't know, there's a finesse to that that I feel like, you know, is an ongoing education, at least on my part, to get better at that. And then, like, lastly, just in terms of, I often ask people this question about advice that they'd give to their younger self. And it's, I think it's sometimes easier for us that have kids, because we're often sharing nuggets of wisdom, whether they want it or not, about I turn everything into a teaching moment, which I'm sure gets very irritating for them. This doesn't apply in life, or how this does apply in life. So for you, you know, because you have had all this experience now and these sort of different chapters for you, when you kind of look back at young Emily, what are some of the things that stick out that would have made that path a little bit easier?
Yeah. You know, so I talk about, obviously I'm a hard worker, and I do think that is a big part of success. But I would also say that, you know, start to learn to fail gracefully and accept that as a learning moment, as a teaching moment for yourself. You know, I think that, you know, really part of success is failure, right? And it's that persistence of not giving up, right, that really, I think, will get you to the finish line, right? Mm. Of course, when you fail, it stings a little bit. And, you know, you've got to do whatever you do to cope with that. You know, I might get angry, or I might, you know, I call it, I give myself, you know, a day or two to have a little pity party for myself after I over the anger, right? And I'm like, okay, you know, all right, it's time for me to put my big girl pants on now. And what am I going to do next? You know, am I going to come at that problem from a different angle? Am I going to go chase something else? And so, you know, I think failure is part of growing. It's part of learning. It's part of success. And I mean, I have failed recently. In the past 6 months, I've failed, you know. But it's what you do next, right? And do you have the persistence and the stubbornness almost to be stronger than the problem you're facing?
Yeah, it's so interesting as you're talking about it. I'm thinking about it. We have so much discipline to achieve, right? If you think about it, like all the ways in which you structure your day, or people that are running businesses, or even in your own job, if you're working for a big company, but you have this framework of achieving and setting up ways to succeed. And then we don't really apply the same vigor to the failure in terms of approaching it in the same, like embracing it, thinking about it, taking it in, process it. What does it mean to me? How do I leverage it? Do I need to let go? Do, you know, it's like, right. I think a lot of us just naturally want to shut it off and
right.
like move on and be like, okay, well, I failed at that. So now it must meet. And versus like really embracing it and then figuring out how can you learn from it or leverage it.
Exactly.
And it might just be that. That's the other thing. It doesn't have to, I've gotten, as I've gotten older, I use this a lot, but it's not a life sentence. Like nothing is forever. Nothing's permanent. Like it's malleable. Right.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean the end of something necessarily unless right. you want it to be.
And I love that idea. You know, it's sort of like I, you know, when my oldest was, you know, thinking about where to go to college, yeah. right? I'm like, this is not a life decision. This is what you're going to do next semester, right?
right?
So it takes the stress off of that decision,
it does.
Right?
Yeah.
And you don't feel like this is the rest of my life. Oh my God. No, no, no. This is like the next 4 months.
Right.
So you think about it in compartmentalized yeah. stages, you know, it can become all of a sudden a lot less overwhelming, right? So
you're
yay!
The best.
Oh no, you are.
This is so good. I knew, you know, I feel like I could talk to you for a really long time and I feel like we just scratched the surface. I think there's so much you can learn in terms of as someone, you know, like you who's experienced this path and the fact that you're at that 10-year mark, I think, and I love the specificity that you talked about each part of that, because I do think there's not enough out there of those first 5 years. You know, what you described in those first five mm-hmm. years is not what someone looking at you now would think. They would just assume it was always like that.
Right. No.
And that's why I really appreciate you going into that detail and giving that perspective yeah. because I think it's helpful for you know, anyone that's maybe interested in pursuing this world of being an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Come back. Thank you, Emily, for joining us on Relatable. I loved hearing the details of your path and your candor about how long it took for you to earn that first dollar and for iConsult to gain momentum. Of course, I enjoyed your thoughts on the power of soft skills and relationships and how important it is to adjust to others. Thank you to Missy for producing this episode and to Hannah for your support. A big thank you to our Relatable community. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment and subscribe and rate us on your favorite streaming platform. Relatable is sponsored by TFA Soft Skills, and you can find more information about Relatable and our sponsor by visiting tfasoftskills.com. Until next time, this is Teresa Freeman with Relatable. Stay connected.